so I kept a bottle in my desk drawer for those times when I saw him ogling a woman's ass. I'd douse myself before going into his office and pretending I needed help with a story.
Creative, I said.
I thought so.
Ireland St. James had a wicked side, that was for sure. I probably shouldn't have, but I found it rather sexy. The waiter came back over to take our order, but we still hadn't checked out the menu.
Have you decided yet?
Ireland held her menu up to the waiter.
Actually, I'm not going to be staying for lunch, so it's just Mr. Lexington.
All right. The waiter nodded and then turned to me. For you, sir. I need a few more minutes. After the waiter walked away, I raised a brow. Not hungry?
I'm always hungry, but I need to change the flat to my spare so I can drive the car to the tire shop. My roommate has to work at 3, and she's going to give me a lift back home so I don't have to wait there. Last time they took hours, and now that I'm employed again, I have a ton of work to catch up on.
I nodded. Do you have AAA? I wasn't sure why the hell I'd asked. Was I going to go over and roll up the sleeves of my custom-made shirt and change it for her if she didn't?
No, but I know how to change it. I've done it before.
She laughed.
I once went on a date with a guy who got a flat while driving me home. He'd never changed a tire, so I changed it for him.
I smiled. I bet he didn't get a second date. She finished off her wine.
Definitely not.
My mind conjured up a quick flash of Ireland changing a tire. Only she wasn't changing some guy's tire while dressed for a date. She had on a pair of Daisy Dukes, a shirt tied in a knot, exposing a fuck of a lot of tanned skin. Her hair was in pigtails, and she had a smudge of grease on her cheek. The grease was fucking hot. I shook my head and cleared my throat. I'll let people know to expect you back at work. Ireland stood, and I followed suit. She extended her hand.
Thank you for getting involved. Obviously, you didn't have to, especially after the horrible emails I sent.
I nodded and shook. I think everything worked out the way it should have. She gathered her purse and started to walk away, then turned back.
Oh, and I gave you my number for lunch. Obviously, this means I can't go out with you.
Of course, I smiled. Turns out you're not my type anyway. Ireland narrowed her eyes.
And what exactly is your type?
The non-pain-in-the-ass type. Have a good day, Ms. Richardson.
Chapter 5. You look insane, you know. Mio looked up at the hat on my head. It was totally lopsided and had two weird points that stuck up. It gave off sort of a homeless jester vibe. Not to mention it was going to be 75 degrees today, but I wore it on my drive to work every day anyway. You're just jealous because Aunt Opal doesn't crochet for you. I love Opal. But yeah, not jealous your aunt who was almost blind left me off her Christmas crochet gift list. I opened the passenger door and grabbed my bag. Thank you for getting up and driving me at this ungodly hour. I didn't want to call an Uber and risk getting to work late on my first day back. I owe you one. You owe me $1,000. I'll just add it to your tab. I smiled. Thanks. What time should I pick you up? You don't have to. I'll get a ride or grab an Uber to the tire shop to pick up my car. I'll just see you at home later. The tire shop had called to tell me I also desperately needed brakes and an alignment, so my flat tire had turned into 2 days without a car. Are you sure? I have coverage at the spa today. In fact, I have no idea what to do with myself since Christian talked me into not doing treatments and only managing the place now. I can pick you up. We can even grab some lunch. Better yet, I'll bring you back to the salon and we'll get a couples massage. My treat. Mia owned a successful medispa. The kind that did facials, Botox injections, massages, and laser treatments. Her fiancé was trying to teach her to be a manager instead of a worker bee, so she could prepare to open a second location. I'd love to, but I'm going to have to work late to catch up. Maybe we can grab some dinner when I get home? She wrinkled her nose. I can't. I promised Christian I'd make him his favorite dinner. Tortellini alla Mia. What's that? Tortellini in a cream sauce. He loves the sauce, so I let him paint it on me when he's done. TMI, friend, I laughed. TMI. But I thought he wasn't coming home until tomorrow. He changed his flight. She smiled like a bride 3 weeks away from her wedding day. He said he missed me too much to stay another night after his last meeting, so he's taking the last flight home. I'll probably just crash over there tonight. I opened my mouth and pointed inside it with my finger, making a gagging noise. But the truth was, I envied her relationship with her fiancé. I wouldn't believe most men were coming home early just to see their girlfriend of 3 years, but Christian was as head over heels for Mia now as when they first got together. I got out of the car and held the door. Mia wagged her finger at me. Now be a good girl while you're all alone tonight, and don't email any CEOs to tell them what you think of them. I was never going to live that down. I have a job again, don't I? She shook her head. No idea how that managed to work out. Yeah, me either.
Great show today, Ireland.
Thanks, Mike. My first day back on the air in 2 weeks felt good, and my adrenaline was already pumping to get started on tomorrow's show. I had a renewed sense of pride in my work. Siren poked her head into my office. She looked nervous.
Hey, so I wanted to clear the air. I hope you know I had nothing to do with Bickman giving me your job. I was shocked when he came to tell me he was promoting me.
I could have pretended I believed her bullshit and gone back to the two of us playing ignorant, but she was young and needed someone to set her straight. Come in, Siren. Close the door behind you. She did, but stood right in front of the door. I motioned to the chairs on the other side of my desk. Please take a seat. The poor thing looked pale. She'd played up to Bickman, and I'm sure she'd been thrilled when he handed her my job in a silver platter. But the bottom line was he'd abused his position, and really, she hadn't done anything wrong, except maybe break girl code. I sighed. Most people think a beautiful woman doesn't have to work as hard to get what she wants, and that might be true when she's at a bar trying to get a drink, or when she's in Home Depot trying to find someone to help her down the plumbing aisle, but it's not true in the workplace. A beautiful woman often has to work twice as hard to be seen for who she is here. Because, unfortunately, there are still men out there who can't see past beauty. I think you're going to be a great reporter someday, but you're not there yet. I wasn't at your age either. And when you play into men like Bickman and take a position you haven't earned, you devalue yourself and all women. We need to stick together, not use beauty as a weapon against each other. Siren looked down at her lap for a long time. When she looked up, she had tears in her eyes and nodded. You're right. It didn't feel right when he gave me the job. It felt like I hadn't earned it, because I didn't. I'm not going to pretend I'm totally innocent. You know, the mailroom won't ship anything they receive after 3 o'clock until the following day. I've thrown my share of smiles and batted my damn eyelashes at George to get things out at 4:30. But be careful around men in positions of power who give you something you didn't earn. They're going to expect you to earn it after the fact, in a way you won't like.
Thanks, Ireland.
Anytime. An hour later, my desk phone rang, and the name on the caller ID surprised me. Speaking of men in power, Grant Lexington flashed on the display. I shut my laptop and leaned back in my chair as I picked up the phone. To what do I owe this pleasure?
I was just calling to see how things were going. Bet you settled back in okay.
His deep voice was even raspier on the phone than in person. Despite the lecture I'd given Siren earlier, here I was thinking, I'd like to hear that voice late at night when my hands are under the covers. I tamped down that thought and instead went with being difficult.
Did you call any other employees that don't work directly for you today? Only the ones that sent me drunk emails, and I stupidly gave them back their jobs anyway.
I smiled.
Touché. How are things going?
Fine. No one seems too disappointed that Bickman is gone, and the show went off without a hitch this morning.
It was a good show.
You watched?
I did.
Do you always watch the 6 o'clock news?
Not normally, no.
So you watched it today because... The line went silent. He wasn't going to fill in the blank for me.
Interesting.
He could have easily said he watched it to make sure things went smoothly, or he watched it because he's the damn boss and he felt like it. but his lack of a reason made me think he'd watched it just to watch me, and not for professional reasons. Or maybe I was reading too much into things, and that's what I wanted to think. "Anyway," he said, "I was also calling to invite you to be part of a new committee I'm chairing."
"Oh? What kind of committee?"
He cleared his throat.
"It's, for improving the workplace for women."
"You're chairing a women's workplace initiative?"
"Yes." "Why does that surprise you?"
Because you're not a woman."
"That's a pretty sexist statement. Are you saying a man can't be involved with something to foster a better work environment for women?"
"No, but..."
"If you're too busy."
No, not at all. I'd love to be part of it. What can I do? When does the committee meet?"
"My assistant will get back to you with the details."
"Oh, okay. That sounds great. Thank you for thinking of me."
"Yes. All right. Well then, goodbye, Ireland."
He hung up sort of abruptly, but it was just as well because I liked talking to him way too much.
Chapter 6. "Millie," I shouted without getting up from my desk. My assistant rushed into the office.
"Yes, Mr. Lexington?"
"I need to start a new committee." Her brows knitted. I avoided committees like the plague, and here I was telling her I wanted to start one.
"Okay. What kind of committee and who will be involved?"
I shook my head and grumbled the answer. "The focus of the group is to improve the workplace for women." Millie's eyebrows jumped. "Yeah, I know. I'm fucking shocked, too."
"Okay,"
she said hesitantly, like she was waiting for the punchline.
"Do you have committee members already picked out?"
I waved my hand. "Get a bunch of women. I don't care who they are. And maybe my sister Kate. She loves to have meetings."
"You don't care who the women on the committee are?"
"No." I picked up a pile of papers and shuffled them, trying to pull off casual. "Maybe invite Ireland St. James to be part of it."
"Ireland? The woman who sent you the decapitated flowers?"
Well, when she said it like that, it sounded a little nuts to create a committee out of thin air and invite someone who cut the heads off of the expensive flowers I sent her and walked out on our lunch date before we'd even ordered. I sighed. "Yeah, her. When would you like me?"
"Soon."
"Do you have an agenda in mind for this committee's first meeting?" "Women's shit. I don't know. You must know better than me. Pull something together." Millie looked like she was seconds away from walking over and feeling my forehead to see if I had a fever. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe I was sick instead of losing my mind. It damn well better be one or the other. I dragged a hand through my hair. A committee on women's initiatives? I wanted to be part of that almost as much as I wanted someone to grab my nuts in their fist and twist. Yet here I was, apparently spearheading the group. What the fuck? Ireland St. James. That's what the fuck. In my entire life, I'd never had to go out of my way to talk to a woman, yet this woman had me calling her to check how her day was going and then inventing a fucking committee when she asked the reason for my call. Stress, too much work. It wasn't entirely out of the realm of possibility that I could be experiencing a breakdown. While I debated a quick trip to the therapist, my assistant was still standing in my office, looking at me like I had two heads. I picked up a file and looked at her pointedly. "Do you need anything else from me to get it started?"
No, I don't think so."
"Good, then that'll be all." Millie stopped in my doorway and turned back.
"The mail came. Would you like today's letter?"
"Throw it out," I barked.
"I'll get right on it. And don't forget about the photo shoot tonight."
The confused look on my face told her I had no fucking idea what she was talking about, so she filled in the blanks.
"You have an interview and photo shoot for today's Entrepreneur magazine. It was scheduled a few months ago, and it's on your calendar."
Shit. Photo shoots and interviews were right up there with committees on women in the workplace on my list of crap I had zero interest in being part of. "What time?"
4:30, at Leilani.
I looked at my watch. Great. I had an hour to finish up 6 hours of work.
A half dozen people were already sitting on the dock in front of Leilani when I parked at the marina. It was 4:30, right on the nose. They must have been early. A familiar-looking red-headed woman smiled as I approached.
Mr. Lexington, Amanda Cadet.
She extended her hand to me.
It's so nice to see you again.
Again. Well, that explained why she looked familiar, though I had no idea where we'd met. Probably some industry function. You too. Please call me Grant.
All right. And please call me Amanda.
I looked around at a shitload of equipment. Are you moving in? She laughed.
We brought a lot of camera and video equipment because we weren't sure of the setting. To be safe, we even packed some props and a few canvas backgrounds, though we can obviously put all that back in the truck.
She turned to eye my boat.
This sailboat is stunning, and the scenery is better than any movie set.
Thank you. It was my grandfather's. First sailboat he ever built in 1965.
Well, you could have told me it was brand new.
I nodded my head toward the Leilani May. Why don't I show you around and you can decide where your crew wants to set up? I gave Amanda a quick tour. The 60-foot catch was eye candy, even to non-boaters. Navy hull, satin-finished teak wood, cream upholstery, stainless steel galley, an owner's stateroom more luxurious than most apartments, and three guest cabins made it look more like a Vineyard Vines ad than a 60-year-old sailboat.
So, what do you think? Where should we do this?
Honestly, anywhere would make for a great shoot. The boat is beautiful.
She lifted a painted nail to her bottom lip, calling my attention to it.
And the subject is flawless. This cover is going to pull big numbers.
Amanda Cadet was attractive, and she knew it. She also knew how to use it to get what she wanted. Though whatever she thought she was getting from me, a story with some major revelation or my mouth between her legs, she wouldn't be. Because business and pleasure don't mix. I almost laughed at that thought after the way I'd been acting around Ms. Aruba tits. I held out my hand to indicate she should exit the cabin first. Why don't we go out on the rear deck and set up on the left side with the marina in the background?
That sounds perfect.
I posed for pictures for the better part of an hour, hating every moment of it, but keeping my contempt to myself. When they had enough shots to plaster the walls of my office, Amanda told everyone to pack it up.
Do you want me to video the interview? Her cameraman asked.
The piece she was putting together was for print, but it wasn't uncommon to record a session so the reporter could go back later and listen for things they'd missed in their notes. Amanda's eyes swept over me.
No, that's okay. I think I'm good taking care of this one all by myself.
After the crew left, we sat alone on the back deck.
So how often do you get down here to go boating? My brother is an orthopedic surgeon with a 50-foot carver down in San Diego Bay. I think he used it twice last year.
The truthful response to that question was every damn day. But I preferred to keep my private life private. The fact that I lived on the Leilani May was none of her business, and definitely not something I intended to share with her readers. I nodded like I could relate to her brother. Not often enough.
I love that you still have your grandfather's first boat. I think the things a man holds on to say a lot about him.
If she only knew the half of it. This boat built my family's company.
How so?
This was his first model, and he used it to take the initial orders for Lexington Craft Yachts. 30 years later, Lexington Craft went public, and my family used the proceeds to expand into different entertainment-related businesses. My dad had started a sports magazine, and my grandfather bought a few more publications. Eventually, that led to buying a news station and chain of movie theaters. So without this boat, you wouldn't be interested in interviewing me today. She flaunted a flirtatious smile.
Something tells me I'd be interested in interviewing you whether you were the CEO to one of the top 100 growing companies in America or your job was to clean this boat.
I'm not that interesting.
Humble too, huh? I like it.
She winked.
Tell me about your family's foundation. Your mother started it, correct?
That's right. It's called Pia's Place. My mother was put into the foster care system because of abuse when she was 5. She moved around a lot, so it was difficult for her to keep the same therapist for too long.
She had a different counselor every year at Child Protective Services because those people are underpaid and overworked, so they tend to have a revolving door. She always felt different than the other kids in school, most of whom didn't know what foster care was. So it was difficult to connect with someone who understood what she was going through. Pia's place is sort of like a Big Brother program for foster kids, except all of the big brothers and sisters are former foster children themselves, so they can really connect with the kids they're assigned to. The foundation trains the volunteers and covers the cost of all of their outings, meals, and entertainment when they spend time with their little sister or brother. It also pays down a chunk of any student loans the volunteers have or helps them pay for a college education. That's amazing. It was amazing, and that's because my mother was a very special person. But all this shit was readily available online, so if this was news to Amanda, she hadn't done her homework. I smiled. My mother never forgot where she came from. And you and your two sisters were adopted from foster care, right? I nodded. More shit anyone with access to Google could find in 2 minutes. That's right, my parents became foster parents when I was 5. I was first, and then my sister Kate, then Jillian. We were all originally foster placements. My mother continued to take in children until she became sick.
I'm sorry about your loss.
Thank you. And do you have a little brother? I mean, in the program? I know you don't have an actual one. I do. He's 11, going on 20. My sisters are paired up, too. She smiled.
What's his name?
Finally, one probing question. Though I wasn't about to give her Leo's name, the relationship between a big and a little were private, especially mine and Leo's tangled one. I prefer not to divulge anything about kids who are part of the program.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I understand. They're minors. I wasn't thinking.
Over the next half hour, we talked about more things that would find their way into the puff piece she'd write. Who runs what at Lexington Industries, how well the company is doing, and the direction I'd like to take things in the next few years. Then she attempted to get some personal questions in.
Are you single?
I nodded. I am.
No special someone to take sailing on the weekend on this beautiful boat?
Not at the moment. She tilted her head.
That's a shame.
My phone started to buzz. I looked down. It's the office. Please excuse me for a moment.
Of course.
I swiped to answer, knowing full well who would be on the line, and took a few steps away from Amanda.
Hi, Mr. Lexington. It's Millie, and I'm about to head out for the day. It's just about 6 o'clock. You wanted me to call and let you know when it was 6.
Yes, that's great. Thank you. I held the phone up to my ear for a minute after my assistant hung up, and then turned back to my interviewer. Sorry. I have an overseas call I'm going to need to take in a few minutes. Do you think we can finish up?
Oh, of course, no problem.
She stood.
I think I have everything I need for now anyway.
It's going to be one hell of a dull article. Great, thank you. Amanda packed up her notepad and dug a business card out of her purse. Writing something on the back, she extended it to me with a tilt of her head.
I wrote my home number on the card.
She smiled.
I love to sail.
I smiled back like I was flattered. I'll keep that in mind the next time I'm going out, which will not likely be anytime soon, considering the boat hasn't moved from the dock in close to a decade. Offering a hand, I helped Amanda over to the dock. She lifted the strap of her bag onto her shoulder and looked down at the name painted in gold across the back of the Navy hull.
Leilani May, she said. Who's the boat named after?
I winked. Sorry. Interview is over. Chapter 7. 15 years ago. I couldn't stop staring. The snow was coming down pretty heavy, and the new girl stood out front with her mouth open, tongue sticking out, and no shoes on as she spun around with her eyes shut. She laughed as she caught snowflakes in her mouth. Lily. Lily. I needed to get some of those flowers to see what they smelled like. Not that I was dumb enough to think Lily would actually smell like a lily, but I somehow knew the smell was going to be the best smell ever. I had a gnawing ache in my chest as I watched from the window. The logical reason for it was the grilled cheese and tomato soup Mom had made for lunch earlier.
but I knew that wasn't it. Even at 14, I knew what love felt like. Well, I hadn't until an hour ago when the doorbell rang, yet now I was absolutely certain of it. Lily. Lily. Grant's Lily. It even sounds right, doesn't it? Grant and Lily. Lily and Grant. If we have kids, maybe they'll be named after flowers too. Violet, Poppy, Ivy. Wait, Ivy isn't a flower. It's a damn weed, I think. Whatever. It's not important. I leaned closer to the window in my father's office, and my warm breath fogged the view. Raising a hand, I wiped it clear with the cuff of my sweatshirt. The movement caught Lily's attention down below. She stopped spinning, cupped her hands around her eyes to shield them from the snow, and squinted up at me. I probably should have ducked so she didn't see me, but I was frozen, completely and totally mesmerized by this girl. She yelled something I couldn't hear with the window shut, so I unlocked it and slid it open. I had to clear my throat to get words out. "Did you say something?" "Yeah," I said. "Are you some sort of a creeper or something?" Shit. Now she thinks I'm weird. First, I'd practically run out of the room when my mother introduced her to us, and now she'd caught me watching her like some sort of stalker. I needed to play it cool. "No," I yelled. "Just watching to see if any of your toes are going to turn black and fall off from frostbite. Didn't you see The Day After Tomorrow?" She shook her head. "I've never been to a movie." My eyes widened. "You've never been to a movie?" "Nope. My mom doesn't believe in television or movies. She thinks TV makes us believe stupid things." "But if you'd watch The Day After Tomorrow, you might have shoes on." She smiled, and my heart literally skipped a beat. It felt like it had done a quick somersault the moment she flashed her pearly whites. I rubbed at the spot on my chest, though it didn't hurt at all. Looking down again at Lily, I yelled, "Hey, do that again."
"Do what?"
"Smile." And there it was, an unmistakable skipped beat inside my chest. Lily turned to look all around her.
"Did you hear that?"
"Hear what?"
"Bells jingling?"
Maybe we were both imagining things. "No, no bells." She shrugged.
"Maybe it's Santa Claus. I heard you rich people believe until you're like 30 because you keep getting gifts every year."
Suddenly, the outside motion detector light flashed on, and I heard my mother's voice.
"Lily, what are you doing out there? Come inside before you catch a cold." "Yes, Mrs. Lexington. I was just checking out the snowflakes. I've never seen snow before in person." "Oh, my. Okay, well, come inside, and let's get you properly dressed. Kate has a snowsuit and boots that should fit you, and a hat."
Lily looked up at me and smiled one more time. My heart squeezed inside my chest. Again. Damn, who knew love could be so painful? The next morning, I couldn't find her anywhere. Mom usually made the new kids take the bus to school with me on their first day, and then I'd walk them to the office where she'd already be registering them and talking to the guidance counselor. I poured cereal into a bowl and grabbed the milk out of the refrigerator, but when I went to put the container back, I heard a loud bang coming from the door that led to the garage. I scooped up a mouthful of golden grams and went to see what was going on, carrying my cereal bowl. Opening the door, I halted mid-chew. "What are you doing?" Lily's brows drew tighter. She seemed legitimately confused by my question.
"Painting. What does it look like I'm doing?"
"It looks more like you painted yourself." Lily stood in front of an easel, her arms and legs covered in a dozen different colors of paint. She had on a long t-shirt that covered her ass, but barely. My eyes snagged on her legs, which had less paint than the top half of her, but were so long and smooth. I'd never seen a girl with such long legs before. I had the strongest urge to pick her up and see if she could cross her feet at the ankles behind my back. I didn't realize how long I'd been staring until she spoke again.
"You're dripping."
My eyes jumped up to meet hers. "Huh?" She smiled and nodded her chin toward my cereal bowl. I'd been holding it crooked and milk was dripping onto my shoes.
"Shit!"
I righted the bowl. Lily laughed. God, this girl was beautiful. Long black hair, naturally tanned skin in the dead of winter, and the biggest brown eyes I'd ever seen.
and she was tall, only a few inches shorter than me. Ever since the summer of eighth grade, when I grew 4 inches in just a few months, most of the girls didn't come up to my shoulders, but Lily did, and it felt right that she was tall, like she was meant to stand out over all the other girls. I shook my head and snapped myself out of it. "Does my mother know you're in here painting? The bus comes in like 15 minutes. Her button nose wrinkled. "Bus? "Yeah, you know, school. It's 7 o'clock. "In the morning?" Now I was as confused as her. "Yes, the morning. You thought it was still nighttime?" "Yeah, I guess I painted all night. I must have lost track of time." She shrugged. "That happens sometimes." I walked over and looked at the canvas. "You painted that?" "Yeah, it's not that good." My brows rose. The painting, which was some sort of abstract of a bunch of intertwined flowers, looked like it belonged in a museum, if you asked me. If that's not good, I hope you don't see the crap I make in art class." She smiled, and again my chest tightened. "My mom took me to Hawaii once. The flowers there were so beautiful. It's the only thing I like to paint." She shrugged. "I'm sort of obsessed with doing it. I name them all. This one is called Leilani. It means heavenly flower and child of God in Hawaiian. It's a popular name there. My grandmother was Willow. My mom is Rose, and I'm Lily. So we're all named after flowers and plants. Maybe when I have my own little girl someday, I'll name her Leilani." Wow, that's screwed up. I'd had the same thought about naming kids after flowers. Except my thought hadn't been about Lily's kids, it had been about our kids. "Leilani," I said. "It's a beautiful name." Lily closed her eyes and took in a deep breath. "Leilani, it is, isn't it?" "You're beautiful too." I wasn't sure where that even came from. Well, obviously I knew where it came from. It was the truth. But I hadn't expected it to come out of my mouth. Lily set the brush down on her easel and wiped her hands on her t-shirt. She walked over and stood directly in front of me, right in my personal space. Every hair on my body rose, and my palms immediately started to sweat. What the hell is wrong with me? I'd made out with girls before, and yet this girl made me nervous to even be around her. Pushing up on her toes, Lily kissed my cheek gently. "I think this might be the first foster home I like living in." "Yeah, I think I'm going to like you living here too."
Chapter 8. Oh, good. It didn't start yet. A woman in a gray suit took the seat next to me at the conference table. She seemed flustered. "I heard he's a stickler for being on time." "Grant?" I asked. Her brows drew together. "Mr. Lexington, yes." "Oh, right. Mr. Lexington. I guess he was Grant when he was a guy I was going to go out with, but now he's back to Mr. Lexington." "His secretary came in a few minutes ago," I said. "He's running a few minutes late." The woman smiled. "Great. My daughter's called and I had to referee an argument over a hairbrush." She extended her hand. "I'm Ellen Passman, by the way. I'm the accounting manager over in finance." I shook. "Ireland St. James, or Richardson. I'm in the news division of broadcast media. Richardson is my on-air name." "Oh, I know who you are. I love your show." I smiled. "Thank you." "I'm really excited about this new committee. But I wish we had a little more notice. It's the end of the month and crunch time for my department." I'd been curious about how this committee came about ever since Grant had called. I couldn't shake the crazy thought that he'd made up the entire thing while on the phone with me. Of course, that was ludicrous, not to mention egotistical and self-absorbed. Yet the idea kept nagging at me. "When did you get invited?" I asked. "Just this morning. You?" "A few days ago." "Did you receive an agenda for the meeting or anything?" "Nope, nothing." The air in the room changed, and I knew who'd walked in before I turned my head. Grant Lexington stood just inside the door with the VP of the news division, Kate Benton, my boss's boss, who was also his sister. He scanned the room, and his eyes stopped upon finding me, as if he'd found what he was looking for, which was crazy. His gaze was so intense that it made me want to fidget in my seat. "Sorry I'm late," he said. Thank you all for coming. He turned to his sister. I'm sure you all know Kate. She's the vice president of broadcast media. People thanked him for inviting them, but I stayed quiet, observing. There were a few open seats. The head of the table, one down at the far end of my side, one directly across from me, and one to my left. Without discussion, his sister moved to the open seat a few spots over. I got the feeling this man took the power seat in every room he walked into. But then he surprised me. He pulled the chair from the head of the table and held it out. Kate. His sister seemed just as surprised, but she turned back and took the seat anyway. Grant unbuttoned his jacket and pulled out the chair next to me. He leaned close as he settled in and whispered quietly, "Good to see you, Ireland." I nodded. No one at the table seemed to notice anything strange. Certainly not that he'd taken the seat next to me and moved it a little closer than it had been before, and luckily not that my mind was reeling from the way he smelled. Clean, but with a masculine, woodsy edge. For the next half hour, I tried to ignore the man sitting next to me and tried not to fidget. But I had to look at Kate while she spoke, which meant Grant's profile was directly in my line of sight. It also meant I noticed how tanned his skin looked, and that he had a slight white line on the sides of his head from sunglasses. I wouldn't have taken him for the outdoorsy type, but it looked like he spent a lot of time in the sun. His skin was bronzed, his hair slicked back, and it could use a trim at the edges where it reached his collar. He had the start of a 5 o'clock shadow, even though it was only 10 in the morning. I wondered if he shaved at night, or if he'd just had so much testosterone that a beard started sprouting just a couple of hours after he put down the razor. My gut said it was the latter. Possibly feeling eyes on him, Grant turned and looked at me. His eyes immediately dropped to my lips, and I lost the battle I'd waged not to fidget. I forced my attention back to Kate, but I didn't miss the slight lip twitch from the man next to me before he refocused on his sister. "Why don't we go around the room and open the floor for possible agenda items for our next meeting?" Kate said. "I'd love to hear what you all think are some of our most pressing women's issues here at Lexington Industries."
"That's a great idea," Grant said.
Some of the women were more enthusiastic than others. One woman spoke about the need for a breastfeeding room. Another spoke about mixing family responsibilities with work and how flexible hours in the workplace would be a great asset to working moms and dads. An older woman advocated for equal pay for women, which had been the issue I'd planned to speak about since I had personal experience with it. Two women passed on speaking, saying they needed to give it some thought, and then it was my turn. I'd been about to second the other woman's comments on equal pay when I felt Grant's eyes on me. At the last second, I decided to screw with him. "I think sexual harassment needs to be addressed. Things like a boss or a boss's boss asking a woman out to lunch." Grant kept his face stern, yet I caught the slight tick of the muscle in his jaw. "Absolutely," Kate said. "Things like that should never happen." Grant cleared his throat.
"I do a lot of business over meals. It's partially out of necessity because there are only so many hours in the day. Are you saying we should put an end to the practice of people sharing lunch altogether?"
I addressed him directly. "Not at all. But it's a slippery slope, and it's often difficult for a woman to know if a man is inviting her to lunch to discuss business or if there's more to it." Grant held my eyes for a few heartbeats and then gave a curt nod.
"Very well. Add that to the agenda for our next meeting."
He stood abruptly.
"I think this has been a good start. I'll have my assistant type up notes and schedule the next meeting."
Kate looked just as confused as most of the people at the table, but I got the feeling she was used to her brother's abruptness. She smoothed things over. "Yes, we appreciate you all taking time to kick things off with us, and we look forward to addressing the many unique needs of women in the workplace. I think this committee is going to do very good things for Lexington Industries. Thank you for making the time, everyone." I stayed in my seat as people got up, eavesdropping on a conversation between Grant and Kate. "You decide to create this committee, come up with a flimsy agenda 3 hours ago, and stick me at the head of the table to punt." Kate shook her head. "I finally get things going, and you grow bored. Do me a favor. don't take an interest in any committees anymore. She shuffled the papers in front of her and turned on her heel to walk out. I rose and headed for the door, but I felt Grant walk up behind me. He discreetly took my elbow and steered me to the right as we exited the conference room.
"Can we speak for a moment?" he whispered.
"Sure. Would you like to hear more about my thoughts on sexual harassment?" I offered a smug smile. His jaw flexed, and I continued to walk by his side down the hall to his office. Arriving, he extended a hand for me to walk in first.
"This is me being a gentleman. I hope it's not a form of harassment."
Grant spoke to his assistant from the doorway while I took a look around his office. It was large, the proverbial corner office with floor-to-ceiling windows covering two walls, a masculine-looking carved dark wood desk in the center, and a separate seating area to one side. A framed photo on a credenza caught my attention, Grant and his two sisters with an older woman, who I assumed might be his mother, though I didn't ask when he walked in and joined me. He motioned to the seating area.
"Please, have a seat."
He took the seat across from me, unbuttoned a cufflink, and started to roll up one of his shirt sleeves.
"So, your boss's boss's boss asking you to lunch is sexual harassment?"
My eyes had been glued to his muscular forearms. I blinked a few times and looked up. I'd been teasing him when I said that in the conference room, but the look in his eyes wasn't playful.
"I was just screwing around with you." "So you didn't find it harassing when I asked you to lunch to discuss your reinstatement?"
I'd actually been referring to when he'd asked me to lunch before I knew who he was. But Grant looked genuinely concerned that he'd upset me. I felt like I should let him off the hook. I shook my head.
"I never felt harassed. Sexual harassment is an unwelcome sexual advance. You never propositioned me once I knew who you were, and if I'm being honest, any advance you made in the coffee shop wasn't unwelcome."
His shoulders visibly relaxed.
"I apologize if I put you in a precarious position in the coffee shop."
I was honest.
"It's okay. Like I said, it wasn't unwelcome."
Grant seemed to avoid looking at me. He nodded and finished rolling up the other sleeve before standing.
"Thank you for your candor."
I stood.
"Of course."
A moment of awkwardness settled in between us. I was acutely aware of how much my body liked being this close to him. The air had a crackle to it whenever he was near, and I didn't think I was the only one who felt it. Probably not the best thing to be thinking about right after the meeting we'd just had.
"Okay, well, I'll see you at the next meeting, I guess."
Grant nodded. He looked like he wanted me to leave his office almost as much as I wanted to leave, which was not at all. Nevertheless, I took a few steps toward the door. Then I changed my mind. If I could be candid, so could he.
"Can I ask you something?" I said.
"What is it?"
"Did you make up the women's committee while you were on the phone with me? Or was it something you had in the works?"
Grant raised one brow.
"You're very full of yourself, aren't you? The president of a multinational company makes up an entire initiative just to have the chance to spend a little time with you."
I felt my cheeks heat. I knew how egotistical it sounded. I laughed nervously.
"I guess that is a little insane."
Grant stepped closer to me.
"It would also be highly inappropriate, wouldn't it now?"
I could have sworn there was a glimmer of amusement in his eyes. Damn, my imagination was really having a field day. I needed to get the hell out of here.
"Yes. Yes, I suppose it would be." I shook my head. "I should get back to work."
I suddenly had the urge to flee and headed for the door. As I reached the doorway, Grant called after me.
"Ireland."
I turned back. Dear God, the man was handsome. He was the kind of gorgeous your eyes snagged on while walking and made you trip over your own 2 feet. Basically the dangerous kind women should keep away from, particularly with the cocky smile he wore on his face.
"I'm glad we've cleared up that any advance wasn't unwelcome. I'll see you around, soon."
My brain felt like it was misfiring as I walked out of his office. What the hell had just happened? I'd admitted that I welcomed any advance by him, and he'd admitted what? I played the conversation over in my mind as I headed for the elevator. While I had been forthcoming,
Grant hadn't actually admitted anything. In fact, when I asked him if he'd created the meeting just for my benefit, he'd turned the question around on me. He never did give me a straight answer, did he?
Chapter 9.
A committee on women's initiatives? Seriously? I sighed as my sister Kate helped herself into my office.
We already did this dance after the meeting ended, remember?
I'm not done discussing it.
Of course you're not, I mumbled under my breath.
Why the committee? There's a reason.
I shuffled papers on my desk. It's an initiative I've been thinking about for a long time. I thought I'd mentioned it to you.
Kate squinted. How long?
How long what?
How long have you been thinking about this initiative?
A long time. I stacked the papers I'd gathered into a pile in the middle of my desk and straightened them. My sister stayed quiet. She was waiting for me to look at her. I took a deep breath and raised my eyes to meet hers. She studied my face before speaking again.
Why don't I believe you?
I rolled my eyes. Because you're a man-hating narcissist.
True, but that's not it.
I knew all of my sister's tones. There was the pissed-off one when she thought I was an asshole and was starting to lose patience, and then there was the warm and caring one she used when she discussed subjects like our parents. Most commonly, I was on the receiving end of the snarky tone, which I generally deserved. But the tone right now? This was her bloodhound tone, the one where she sank her teeth into every word I said to look for underlying meaning. She knew I was full of shit about my interest in a women's initiative, and it was killing her not to know the real reason I'd done what I did. I opened my desk drawer and pulled out a file. Plopping it down on the desk, I said, I have a meeting in 5 minutes, so why don't you go play detective in your own office? If you come up with any more clues, have your assistant send a memo to my assistant. My sister scowled at me.
You're an ass, you know that?
My lips curved to a genuine smile. Love you too, sis. Kate rolled her eyes.
Don't forget about the One World Broadcasting fundraiser Friday night. Are you bringing Arlia?
Arlia and I aren't seeing each other anymore. I made a mental note to let Arlia know about that.
Oh, who are you bringing?
I don't always need to bring a date to functions.
Yet you always do.
She walked toward my doorway.
Oh, I almost forgot. The woman you recommended to replace Bickman, Madeline Newton, came back clean on her updated background check. I interviewed her after my director finished. We both agree she'd be a good fit. I'll be making her an offer at the end of this week. But we can invite her to the fundraiser if you'd like. Bickman always went, and we have the empty seat at our tables.
Sure, that's fine. Kate turned to leave. Wait, I called after her. Who usually gets invited to these things if there's no department head? She shrugged.
No one, or sometimes the acting department head.
On second thought, let's hold off on making Madeline an offer for a week or two. I pulled a lie out of my ass. It was so believable that when I said the words, I wondered if maybe they were true. I heard she applied over at Eastern Broadcasting. I'd like to see if she takes that job if we don't give her the position right away. See how loyal she is and what she's willing to risk to stick around with us. My sister looked surprised, but she bought the story.
Oh, okay, she said. That's a good idea. I'll hold off on her offer and won't invite her to the fundraiser, which would give her a hint she was getting the job. I'll see if the interim department head can attend instead.
Nice, Kate. Your idea to invite Ireland. I waved my hand like I wasn't thrilled at the prospect of the interim department head coming to the fundraiser decked out in a sexy as shit dress.
Fine, whatever you want.
Kate went to turn around a second time, and I stopped her yet again. Also, since the topic of sexual harassment came up in our new committee meeting, I'd like to read our policy, brush up on how we handle things, and also whatever policy we have on workplace relationships. Maybe I'd pushed my bullshit too far. My sister's brows jumped.
Really? You want to read policy?
Yes.
Well, there's a first time for everything, I suppose. We have a sexual harassment policy, of course. But we don't actually have a corporate policy prohibiting office relationships and dating.
80% of people have either observed or been involved in an office relationship. Who are we to tell people that work 90 hours a week that they can't date a coworker? I scratched at the scruff on my chin. So what Ms. St. James referenced in our meeting, a boss asking an employee on a date, that's permissible? Well, that's where it gets tricky. It's not illegal or against policy for a manager to ask out his employee, per se. But sexual harassment is illegal under Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act, as well as California law and our own corporate policy, which prohibits creating a hostile workplace based on a person's sex. A manager and an employee get friendly, maybe one misreads the other's signals, and then all of a sudden, a rebuffed request for a date creates a difficult workplace environment. I nodded. Good to know. Thank you. After Kate disappeared, I sat down in my chair and stared out the window. I'd never dipped my pen in company ink. In fact, I didn't get involved with anyone in the goddamned industry. I liked my private business kept private. Yet here I was inquiring about policy and procedure, ready to rewrite it if I needed to, just to keep my fantasy about getting an Ireland St. James's pants alive. Fuck. I dragged a hand through my hair. That thought alone could probably get me in hot water. Though, like my sister said, federal and state laws only pertain to unwelcome advances. And Ireland had been clear that my previous advance, before she knew who I was, hadn't been unwelcome. Now all I needed to do was to have my employee welcome further advances, like telling her I can't stop thinking about her wicked mouth wrapped around my cock. 2 days later, I'd managed to get my head back in the game and get some actual work done, work that didn't involve Ireland St. James. I'd just finished a conference call with our London attorneys when Millie knocked and opened my office door. "I'm sorry to interrupt, but you have a visitor." I looked at my watch. I didn't think the meeting with Jim Hansen was for another hour. "It's not. Arlia is here." I tossed my pen on the desk and leaned back in my chair with a sigh. I should have texted her back earlier. Better yet, I should have taken her to dinner and broken things off. The last thing I wanted was a scene in my office. Millie saw my face. "I told her you were in a meeting, so I can let her know you're going to be a while, if you want." I seriously considered it, but I liked loose ends even less than confrontation, so I might as well get it over with. I shook my head. "It's fine. Just give me a minute to clean up my desk." Millie nodded, and a few minutes later, she showed Arlia in. Arlia was dressed in a body-hugging black mini-dress that showed off a mile of tanned legs. I stayed behind my desk to avoid an intimate greeting. "I was starting to think you were avoiding me." I smiled. "Just busy." I motioned to the chair on the other side of my desk. "What brings you by?" Arlia Francois was a beautiful woman. A professional model, she knew exactly how to play up her best features. With long legs and two different colored eyes, one bright blue and the other deep brown, she captured everyone's attention. Though when she took a seat and very slowly and purposely crossed her toned legs, neither my dick nor I got too excited. "I have to leave for Paris this weekend, and I'll be gone for 2 weeks. I thought maybe we could get together before then. I'm free Thursday night." Thursday night was the fundraiser. "I have a work event Thursday evening." She pouted. "I have to work Friday, but maybe a late supper?" I wasn't the type of man who ignored women and blew off their invitations as a way of ending things. I preferred direct, and in the long run, most women did too. Though sometimes they didn't appreciate being dumped in the short run. I leaned forward. "You're a wonderful woman, Arlia. But we're in different places, and I think it's best we stop seeing each other." Her flirty, pouty mouth twisted to angry. "What?" "I was up front when we started seeing each other a few months ago. I'm not interested in a relationship right now. Things were casual at first, but I don't think we're looking for the same thing anymore." She raised her voice. "So you just wanted to fuck me then?" I thought explaining that I didn't want a relationship before we went out the first time had clarified that whatever we might have was physical and for companionship. But apparently in the future, I needed to spell it out even more. "Please keep your voice down. I was clear about my intentions from the beginning. Tears flooded her eyes. Shit. I should have taken Millie up on the offer to pretend I was still on my call and done this in a public place where I had an escape route. But I thought we'd grown to more. And therein lay the problem. Some women say they're good with casual, but they aren't. They think they can change what I want and then get pissed off at me for only wanting exactly what I'd said I wanted at the beginning. I'm sorry if you misunderstood. Apparently, that was the wrong thing to say. Her entire face contorted. I didn't misunderstand. You led me on. I hadn't led her on one bit, but I knew when it was best to eat crow. I'm sorry if I did that. Her face softened and she sniffled. Fine. We can keep it the way things were when we started. No strings attached. I could have ended this more easily if I agreed to that and then avoided her in the future. But leaving no strings attached still kept a string between us, and I didn't want to be tethered to her anymore. I think it's best we just end things here completely. Her eyes grew wide. She wasn't used to rejection. But, I'm sorry, Arlia. She recovered by shifting from upset and shocked back to pissed off. Abruptly, she rose to her feet. I joined her in standing. Arlia surprised me by smoothing out her dress. It looked like she was going to leave without too much of a scene after all. Thinking we were good, I made the mistake of walking around the desk to escort her out. But apparently, her composure was only the eye of the storm. Once I got near, her fury reignited.
You're a user.
I'm sorry you feel that way. She raised her voice again.
Your apartment is as dull as you are. The only thing interesting about you is your dick.
Okay, I'm done. I put my hand behind her back, careful not to touch, but to guide her to walk toward my office door. She practically spat at me.
Don't touch me.
I pulled my hand back and raised them both in the air. I was just going to show you out. She reared back and slapped me across the face. The impact was so unexpected and hard, my cheek turned from the momentum of the connection.
I'll show myself out.
I stayed put until the door opened and slammed shut. It had been a long time since I was slapped. A long-ass time. Only now, I was smarter and would be keeping far away after that shit happened. Chapter 10. 14 years ago.
I don't want to go back.
I rubbed Lily's shoulders.
I don't want you to go either.
Her eyes filled with tears.
It's just going to happen again. My mom is fine for a while, and then she stops taking her meds and disappears. Eventually, someone realizes I'm living alone and calls the cops, who then call social services.
Lily had been with us for more than 9 months. She'd told me how when her mom would disappear, she had to steal food from the grocery store and sell shit from their apartment just to eat. She'd stop going to soup kitchens because they asked so many questions about where her parents were.
Listen, I want you to take this.
I held out an envelope with $500 stashed inside, just in case she disappears again. The tears she'd held back began to stream down her face.
I don't need it. You're going to come see me all the time, right? If she disappears, I'll just tell you, and you can bring me something then.
What happens if she makes you move again, Lily? They'd moved dozens of times over the last 15 years. Me showing up at her apartment one day and finding it empty wasn't out of the realm of possibility.
I won't go. How would you even find me?
If you move, you'll write to me. Do you know the address here? Lily nodded and rattled off the house address. I smiled.
Good.
If you ever have to move, you'll tell me in a letter, and I'll come see you every week on Sunday. Even if you move all the way to New York, I promise. That probably seemed crazy, but I knew I'd find a way to do it. Lily and I were meant to be together.
Take the envelope.
It's not much, but you might need it for stamps or stuff for school. She hesitated, but took it. Once she figured out how much I'd shoved inside, she wouldn't be happy. But she'd be back at her mother's, and neither of us was going to be very happy anyway. My mom knocked on Lily's bedroom door.
Lily, sweetheart, are you ready? The social worker is here.
The look of terror on her face killed me.
It freaking killed me. I knew from personal experience that going back home once you'd been removed rarely worked out. Yet the damn judges always wanted to put you back, as if mothers and fathers were entitled to have children, and they had to prove to the guy in the black robe why they were incompetent. Birth parents usually had to screw up a half dozen times before they'd stop